to the first annual, what did we call this, Keith? The first annual Emerging FSU Emerging Writers Spotlight Award. Yay! I just wanted to take a very brief second. My name is Erin Ballou, and I'm the director of the Creative Writing Program. And I just wanted to take a second and congratulate all the people who are representing the program with their beautiful work tonight. We had come up with this because we were hoping to find a way to acknowledge and recognize the enormous amount of just really brilliant work that comes out of this program. So you're seeing people tonight who have done an extraordinary job in a really creative community, but at the same time, I know how this sounds like hashtag, but I feel like in this program everybody's a winner. I really do. Okay, that was terribly earnest, I realize, but I am from Nebraska. But in any case, speaking for all of the faculty, it's a pleasure to have you all as students, and we couldn't be prouder of you. So I will turn the events over to our host and hostess for this evening, and thank you very much for coming.
Hello. It's good to see you guys, see your faces again. I'm the bad person who tells you all the fun things you cannot do tonight. First of all, no cell phone usage, okay? If your wife is pregnant, just put on vibrate and run out the back door. If she goes into labor, that is. Or if you hear that she's pregnant, that's fine. Number two, please, the little candles that we have in the front here, that's as much fire as you're allowed during this performance tonight. No like airborne like diseases, don't release them. I want to live. But anyway, tonight's going to be a great night. We're very glad that you're here. Did I forget anything? All right, thank you guys very much.
All right, I can handle this. So what we're going to do tonight is, since we have so many winners, because everybody's a winner, as we heard, we're going to divide it up. So we're going to do the poetry first, then we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to do all the prose. And we also have many bios to read. So what we're going to do is we're going to introduce you to everybody now. We'll go through the bios, and then the order that we read them is the order that the lovely winners, will come up to the stage and read. Yes. Yeah, I'm just reading poetry first. So we're going to start with Brandy Nicole Martin, who actually wasn't able to be here tonight, but she sent David Thacker to read in her place. He's her little body double for the night. Brandy Nicole Martin's poetry has appeared or is forthcoming in Denver Quarterly, Nashville Review, Washington Square Review, Spoon River Poetry Review, Salt Hill Crab Orchard Review, and Harper Palette, among others. She is at work on an MFA in poetry at Florida State University. And she was the graduate winner. We had a tie for graduate runners-up because I guess they're winners. We've heard that before. So it was Laura Miner is one of them. She's the recipient of the 2016 Emerging Writers Spotlight Award at Florida State University, chosen by D.A. Powell. Her poetry has most recently appeared in Hobart, Spring Gun Press, Bicycle Review, Trivia, The Dead Mule School of Southern Literature, Sixers Review, and Lungful. She was a Teachers College Fellow at Columbia University, the recipient of the Sarah Lawrence Poetry Award, and the finalist for the Steel Toe Books and Pudding House Press. As a singer-songwriter, she is also currently working on a third record forthcoming this fall, while she finishes her debut book of poems as a doctoral candidate in poetry at Florida State University. And our other graduate runner-up, Jamie Ringleb, I hope, grew up in upstate South Carolina and Italy. He is the recipient of scholarships to the Suwannee Writers Conference and the Lambda Literary Writers Retreat, a Fish Trap Fellowship, and poetry prizes from the University of Oregon. And then our undergraduate winner for poetry is Sydney Kleckner, a junior majoring in creative writing at FSU. After graduating, she's caring for elephants in Thailand before getting her master's in social work, which is cool, right? This is the first award she's won, and she hopes to be published soon. And then our runner-up is C.D. Davidson Hires, an undergraduate student majoring in creative writing and French. She says her hometown recently got its first red light. It has been the cause of many accidents. She also, what did she do? She also was an undergraduate winner for prose, for fiction too. So we get to hear from her twice tonight. And that being said, that'll be our order. So we have Brandy's body double, and then we have Laura, Jamie, Sydney, and CD. So clap.
This is the best job ever. I'm going to try to undo the thingy.
You're undoing the thingy.
Now I'm redoing the thingy. Okay. Brandy Nicole could not be here tonight, unfortunately, and so, but I am sure she would want to thank all of you for coming. This is a great crowd, so thank you. It's a loud motor. I'm going to try to do an adequate job here. I wish she could be here. So, this poem is called "If I Have Not Todd" by Brandy Nicole Martin. Like a crane or a swallow, so did I chatter. I did mourn as a dove. Isaiah 38:14. 1. Todd is the alpha and the beatnik. Todd is the slickest omega at the bar. So if I smack Lay's potato chips into contemporary lyric poetry, but have not Todd, what am I but a spandex miniskirt and precursor to muffin top? Or that no-good artiste who thinks coffee shops aren't cliché, who bangs intemperate hands on the keys of a Yamaha piano, chanting to the ceiling heaven at inappropriate hours of the morning. If I have not Todd, I am sans a piano. Because who wouldn't rather snag a solid 8 and wake to 14 cardinals perched eternal on the porch than to hear the late warble of a nymphet past her prime? Watch her foxy run dry as she writhes across shag carpet, tossing her psychedelic body to the dogs, her thighs no longer righteous, legs not groovy as Mississippi rain. 2. So if I possess a knack for cowboy boots, as in strutting my cosmic lady wiles past the rusty buzzard, whereby scoring house booze, free peanuts, and 3 barkeep's digits, or if I outbid the universe for that Elvis lamp on eBay, his forehead and sideburns totally intact, only a microscopic crack in that gold lamé lamp base, but have not Todd, I am 0. I've got not. Todd is so hot, I might as well cough up the Lego Oscar, and if he and I walked that red carpet in the sky, groomed to the teeth, legs a little foozily, I might be a harlot blinded, not merely by paparazzi or by his marble jaw, but because I would have jumped him in the limousine, rode his supple frame classy the Hollywood way, straight into that state-of-the-art ballroom on national TV. Todd is below Mason-Dixon line, sweet. He speaks the king's English. He looks like he sounds. So if I have not Todd, let a stranger stroke me quick, then hurl me into the sea of my frustration. Oh, pent-up sex blogs. Oh, warped Otis Redding records. Oh, urge I have never deserved to have quenched. 3. And where is Todd now? Probably halfway to Graceland, while I'm strung out post-coitus, a junkie for nothing but well-meaning hound dogs, perpetually longing to be walloped by a Cadillac. Yes, I'm mournful as a flock of drunk doves without Todd. My heart droppeth from the sky like fowl for a windshield, and I cannot for the life of me remember how to sway. Todd's absence is ephemeral as last light of daytime, a sprig of cinnamon, wormwood, absinthe burning in throat, the liquid I become when I kneel down to pray. I pray for stillness, that I might not fall back into the nymphomaniac blaze from whence I came. I pray for a cleanse, that my body be awash in toxins no longer, that I might choke down the chia seed kombucha, that I give up rum runners and smoking my wides, thereby warding off alcoholism and gum disease, to be well for the return of Todd. Oh, I am defiled by lack of my Redeemer. I am sullied, stained, and cast aside by the King. My peanut butter and my banana, my volcanic hunk of love. My head is clouded with sulfur and mist. Thanks.
All right. I'm not Laura Miner. This is Laura Miner. We made a clerical error. I don't even know if that's the right word for it, but she was actually tied for the winner for this award. So, yes.
Very sweet. Thank you. Good.
All right. Thanks. Cool. Hey, I'm Laura Miner. Thanks a lot. So, thanks for coming out. This poem is called $9 Bacon. Who is doing the work here that we should be so lucky to escape our respective poverties, our cheating spouses, or the collective foot we elect for our necks, even when we are poets in America? Is there anything more decadent? Maybe Florida, maybe the rasher of $9 bacon I just bought at the local co-op. I see my friend, and I'm thinking of frying it up. He's escaped his brutal youth, kept outside like a dog, to drink from the hose. And I want to feed him bacon, thick-cut, hickory-smoked $9 bacon that I imagine has been handled by women with fat fingers, nipples the size of Meyer lemons, eager and willing to feed the miserable world. I see another friend whose heart was thrown like a newspaper against the side of her own house by an ex with talons in his tone. She deserves some bacon, enough to build a palace of $9 bacon for her and her son to hide in, nibble on the walls, speaking the language of the lonely family, kissing the salt from each other's wounds. And myself, what about me? Am I worthy of my own $9 bacon? I've done my share of weird and selfish things, and I've beat myself up pretty good. I've had enough small injustice to ogle the young man stocking the shelves with bacon. Give the old lady perv some $9 bacon, because she can't remember love's fresh curve. The stupid cruelties are going to keep coming. You're going to see something bad happen to a child before the close of day. One of us will get inoperable cancer. And it's enough to think the rest of us would hold ice chips to the lips, or at least think about it. But for now, while the temperature is tolerable, while the bunnies and deer caper freely among the Madrona trees, let us sing our broken songs into the Pacific. Let us cook up an indecent amount of $9 bacon before we head off to wag our great new fears at the bluffs. All right, thank you very much. This one's called The Murder Hole. It's about an apartment I lived in Brooklyn before I moved here. It's true. The Murder Hole, Brooklyn, New York, 2011. In that apartment, where summer paced out its loss, no money, no real job, even the paint couldn't last, I binge-watched my life in a televised haze, scrolled in my apocalyptic storefront, the door a purgatory facing an expressway. Standing in the shower, I beat its corners into songs as one man after another turned me into an ampersand. That year, I finally made a list of names. To the laurel of the girl I was, to the graveyard spirits of dear yous, the back and forth of the pas de deux, never seeing my worth, just a slash of lipstick for field work, always with the look, the love, death urge that settles a room like a machine gun solves an argument. Never wanting the party to end, I peeled and sectioned myself like a tangerine, ran, tripping down the stairs of anyone to kiss them through a screen, like the figures in Larkin's Arendelle tomb. I make myself an historical event, never finished. And who cares if I've won some love? It's an old coat, rotting composite, but even in stone, our idea of love endures. Though he cheated on her, they are still holding hands at the end. Even when it fails me, it was always me, my hands holding up their shipwrecked faces like soft rafts. If what they remember is the screw, is the rack. Thank you.
Hello. I'd like to thank you guys for coming out, and thanks also to D.A. Powell and FSU, and I am going to try and schmeagle. Oh God, I'm failing. Okay. All right, that's enough schmeagling. No, we'll just lean into it. Okay. This is called Mutius in the Garden of Rejection. Mutius is a character from Shakespeare's Titus Andronicus who is, yes, louder, maybe like this. Okay, hold on. I'm going to the left. No, wrong left. Right. I was always bad at this. This is going to be an enduring theme for the night, I can tell. All right, good. Am I seemingly projecting? Okay, so it's called Mutius in the Garden of Rejection. Mutius is a character from Shakespeare's Titus Andronicus whose father kills him because he commits an act of treason. There are 5 biblical gardens of significance, but more than 25 gardens of significance in Rome, buried under other gardens of significance in Rome. The biblical gardens of significance have not been buried, but God has closed some of them. There are no lyrebirds in Rome, but if there were, they would roost mostly in the Vatican's English garden and mimic the fountain of the eagle's fixed hiss. Lyrebirds are doltish songsters who, closed in a fox's mouth, go limp even before the scrap is done. Here are the major facts. Lyrebirds must roost in low branches, unable as they are, like chickens, to fly for very long. And Mutius is given 25 words before his father casually kills him with a sword. Meanwhile, the Cantonese slang 25 boy means traitor, a small coincidence. Another, in my country, 2.5 is the percent of killings that are filicides. 3 of Mutius's last 25 words are the word help, as are 2 of his last 3. The 5 gardens of the 5 significant gardens of the Bible are the garden of rebellion, the garden of rejection, the garden of redemption, the garden of reception, and the garden of rejoicing. So many re's, as though the Bible keeps trying to get gardens right. 25, in biblical terms, signifies grace multiplied by grace, grace upon grace, which to some Christians means God calls back his children by killing 100% of them. Beside the temple in the Villa Borghese gardens, I bend down to dig. The uncovered soil smells like burnt olives, and I wield a toy spade with the other tourists, revealing a fake archaeological site, buried gardens of the real Lucius Licinius Lucullus, who has, we're told, been memorialized by a strain of Swiss chard, a mild and sweet strain, one which holds well after cutting. In my edition of Titus Andronicus, the stage direction is stabbing Mutius, but my edition of Titus Andronicus does not specify the number of times Mutius is stabbed. My father knows why 5 is the biblical number for grace, and he knows how to multiply grace by grace, but I do not. I dig in the foreign garden where I want the lyrebird to be, and a fox who knows the lyrebird can fly, but not for long, and that it can live for 25 years, but rarely does. Thank you.
That work? Yeah? Okay. I'm Sid. My poem is called Barbie Ain't Taught Me Nothing. I was just really inspired when I saw Jennifer Knox read here, and just like her style of writing, it was just really, really cool. And so I kind of wrote this after that. So yeah, hope you enjoy it. And also, I just want to thank D.A. Powell. I don't know if he's here or not, but lots of thanks. A little bit more.
Is that good?
Is that good? Is it good? Yeah, it's good. Okay. Okay, yeah. So, Barbie ain't taught me nothing. Once, my daddy told me I could do anything and everything I wanted. Well, shit, daddy. I'm gonna be a celebrity and be in movies and music videos. My daddy said I could do better than famous, to shoot further than the stars. Well, damn, daddy, I don't want to be no astronaut. I want to be a model. My daddy said louder that I could still be better, to swim further than the largest ocean. Damn it, daddy, you know I ain't no fucking shark. I just want to have big ass and titties to shake. My daddy said louder than before that he knew I could still do better, to pound the Earth's core harder than an earthquake. Astastic, daddy. Do I look like motherfucking BP with their motherfucking drills? I don't want to fuck up the Earth like that. My daddy said, now screaming, grabbing the cigarette out of my Barbie's mouth, then explain to me, child, how the hell are you going to save it when you're made out of plastic? So yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Does this work? Thank God. So the title reads into the poem, so here we go. Bring back my wife, you bastard, my father's words. It was a lesson in justification in Hammurabi's code, but I do wonder what kind of animal peace would be. I sit on warmed porch steps, watch a small gray mare snip grass, top lip making circles, twirling blades into her throat, her big molars grind together. A psychiatrist told me I would find closure. I gave her a check, never cried. The gray mare sneezes and I think about dead bodies. Do they all hit the ground in the same way? Like when my mother's black gelding tipped over sideways into freshly dug dirt as my father's bullet hollowed out the area beneath the whorls of his blaze. Brain matter, slow slide of pink down his forehead. His halter was still on. Now I associate its brown leather with the tractor tires that dug the horse's grave, sunk heavy that day into mud, leaving wet ruts. I want to know how long it took for the gelding to decompose. I imagine even now digging into that overturned earth and a horse skull giving me a skittish eye. The gray mare shakes her head. The motion walks her spine.
A deer fly stings her teats. She kicks at it awkwardly, never pauses from grazing. Her molars do their job, crunching at fibers of grass. The sound is lulling, warm air, rhythmic eating. I stand and go inside. Thank you.
For, yeah.